We're calling out Russia's plans loudly and repeatedly because we're doing everything in our power to remove any reason Russia may give to justify invading Ukraine.
Diplomacy still at the front of Ukraine crisis. It's Monday, February 21st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online. You'll find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Beijing Olympics conclude. Indonesia plans for a capital move. A Martian anniversary. Tiny house village. The electric car race. It's all on today's VOA Asia. President Joe Biden says he is convinced that Russian President Vladimir Putin has decided to invade Ukraine, but that diplomacy is still on the table until that happens. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Western leaders are calling for an end to the shelling on the front line in eastern Ukraine as fears are mounting that Russia is likely seeking a pretext to reinvade its smaller neighbor. A war between Russian-backed separatists and Ukraine has been simmering there since Russia seized Crimea in 2014. President Joe Biden spoke to the American people on the Russian threat for the second time this week with a grim assessment.
As of this moment, I'm convinced he's made the decision. We have reason to believe that.
For the people of Kyiv, Biden also had this warning.
We believe that they will target Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, a city of 2.8 million innocent people. We're calling out Russia's plans loudly and repeatedly, not because we want a conflict, but because we're doing everything in our power to remove any reason that Russia may give to justify invading Ukraine and prevent them from moving.
Biden said diplomacy is still on the table until Russia invades. Top U.S. officials kept up their deterrence and diplomacy push Friday. Vice President Kamala Harris met with NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg on the sidelines of the Munich Security Conference, stressing the U.S. is coordinating with its allies hourly. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin visited a military base in the Polish town of Powiedz with his Polish counterpart. Austin also confirmed that the United States plans to sell 250 Abrams tanks to Poland, viewed as part of an effort to bolster NATO's eastern flank in response to Russian aggression. President Biden and Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky have refused to be provoked or to give in to Russian President Vladimir Putin's military threat. Former U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine William Taylor told VOA.
I am sure President Putin thought that by rattling the saber, by putting all these troops on the border, that he would get President Zelensky and President Biden to fold, to cave, to give concessions. And he's been disappointed. He's been surprised, I imagine. I imagine President Putin is really surprised at the resistance, at the resolve, and at the calm of President Zelensky. I'm sure he thought he would rattle President Zelensky, and he hasn't.
Meanwhile, in Moscow, at a news conference with his Belarus counterpart, Alexander Lukashenko, Russian President Putin told reporters, "Right now we are seeing a deterioration of the situation in eastern Ukraine." He said Russia's massing of troops along Ukraine's borders are drills that, in his words, do not threaten anyone. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Be sure to follow this ever-changing story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, and you can join us at the VOAnews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit VOAnews.com. Thailand and U.S. troops prepare for scaled-down Cobra Gold exercises. U.S. Indo-Pacific strategy short on trade incentives, according to experts. Philippines arrests doctor alleged to be top rebel. UNICEF announces aid for Afghan teachers. Why Asian gaming hub Macau is getting tougher on its big casinos. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more. Find us at Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and VOAnews.com. We have much more ahead on VOA Asia. Right now, for the last 8 years, Ukraine has lived under a permanent state of alert, with a constant threat of Russian intervention in its territory. The fear and tension have led many civilians to seek military training to be prepared in the event of a conflict. Jonathan Speer narrates this report for VOA from Ricardo Marquina in Kyiv.
On the outskirts of Kiev, a group of about 200 men and women receive military training. They are civilians who have joined the Territorial Defense Force, a reserve corps set up by authorities to support the Ukrainian armed forces in the event of a conflict. They train on their own time and they buy their own weapons.
I am here to learn fighting techniques and support the army to defend Ukraine.
Russian military pressure on Ukraine, with a massive deployment not far from its eastern border, has once again raised the spectre of war. For many here, the question is not whether there will be a war, but when.
Putin believes that there is no country called Ukraine and that he has to take it under his control. Since he could not do it by changing his government from within, he only has one option left, the military path.
After more weeks of intense media reporting on a possible conflict, those in charge of these exercises want to reduce tensions among the Ukrainian population and are urging calm, including among these trainees.
Our commanders tell us, clean the gun, get ready, and don't panic. That is the Ukrainian way.
The following workday, these men and women will return to their jobs in the city, while in Moscow and Washington, the political tug of war that could push them to war will continue. For Ricardo Marquina in Kiev, John Speer, VOA News.
The Beijing Olympics have concluded, with the Winter Games making history for a number of reasons. In the competition, Norway won 38 medals, made of a record 16 gold medals, 8 silver, and 13 bronze. Germany placed second with 12 gold, 10 silver, and 5 bronze for 27 total. China reached third place. The host nation won 15 medals, with having collected 9 gold, 4 silver, and 2 bronze. The United States followed in fourth place in the official International Olympics Committee medal table, ranked by medal type. Team USA collected 10 more total medals than China, with 8 gold, 10 silver, and 7 bronze. Russian athletes who competed as the Russian Olympic Committee because of sanctions for systematic athlete doping were second to Norway in total medals with 32, but had 6 gold medals and placed 9th. VOA Asia's Chris Cascao has more from the final day of competition.
China's Wei Wenjing and Han Song captured the gold in pairs figure skating that eluded them 4 years ago in Pyeongchang. Host country China won 9 gold medals. Its previous Winter Olympics best was 5. Germany took gold in 2-woman bobsled. The U.S. team with Alana Myers-Taylor took bronze. It's the 5th medal of her career, the most by a black athlete at a Winter Games. Sunday's gold medal winners, Austria in alpine skiing mixed team parallel, Germany in 4-man bobsled, Norway in women's 30-kilometer mass start cross-country skiing, Britain in women's curling, and Finland won its first men's ice hockey gold. Sunday evening, International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach officially closed the Beijing Olympics at the Bird's Nest Stadium. Bach praised China and thanked the people of the country for staging the games in a safe way. Only 463 positive COVID tests were reported among the thousands of people who came to Beijing for the games. David Sachs of the Council on Foreign Relations on Chinese President Xi Jinping's post-Olympics plans.
I have no doubt that Xi Jinping is going to use this in a domestic political context to help himself consolidate power ahead of the big party Congress coming up and to show that he is able to put China on a global stage and really be a global power. So no doubt that this will play well domestically within China, but I think that in the United States, Europe, and elsewhere, you know, the Olympics will be tied to what is happening in Xinjiang.
Several countries, including the U.S., staged a diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Games. The next Winter Olympics will be held in 2026 in Milan Cortina in Italy. Chris Cascao, VOA News, Washington.
Catch up on all of the Beijing Olympics news with us at voanews.com. Still ahead on VOA Asia, an entire capital city plans to avoid rising water. Happening now in Asia, Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam announced the city will postpone elections for its next leader until May 8th, as the city grapples with a worsening coronavirus outbreak with thousands of infections daily. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're starting off a brand new week together at VOA Asia. Rising sea levels are threatening Indonesia's capital, Jakarta. To relieve pressure on the area, the government is planning to move the national seat of power. But the plan is facing skepticism and resistance, as VOA's Yuni Salim reports in the story narrated by Nova Perwadi.
Jakarta, the capital of Indonesia, is a city of over 10 million people, with millions more in the suburbs. It has been the seat of power in the Indonesian archipelago for centuries, but climate change is taking its toll, as President Joe Biden noted in a speech to U.S. national intelligence officials in July last year.
What happens in Indonesia, if the projections are correct, that in the next 10 years they may have to move their capital because they're going to be underwater?
By 2024, the administration of Indonesian President Joko Widodo wants to lay the groundwork for moving the nation's capital to a new city to be named Nusantara in East Kalimantan province on the island of Borneo.
I'm reminded of the movement of the Brazilian government from Rio de Janeiro to Brasilia. And that was a big project, I think, back in the 1970s and 1980s. But it took much longer than was originally expected.
Jakarta is congested, overpopulated, and by some estimates, a third of it will have sunk by 2050. Indonesia is not the first country to move its capital in recent years. Egypt is looking to do so around 2024, too, to an administrative city just outside its current capital, Cairo. Myanmar moved its capital from Yangon, also known as Rangoon, to Naypyidaw. Even South Korea devolved some administrative functions from Seoul to Sejong. But experts say it won't be an easy move.
There have been some interesting studies of people who have looked at, compared new capital cities and then looked at Jakarta. And they have said this is the most difficult new capital city that has ever been attempted.
Feely, an Australian expert on Indonesia, notes that previous attempts to move a capital have involved the same landmass. Indonesia's plan to move the seat of power to a whole different island will be a much larger ordeal.
It will be very interesting to see. It would be a great triumph for Indonesia if they can build it in budget and on time. But is anyone confident that that would happen?
Other analysts are equally skeptical of the administration's goal to complete the first phase by 2024, including building a new smart state palace and key ministries in Nusantara.
You know, you have to move the people, you have to do all the infrastructure and so forth. So it's not something that can happen under a single term in office.
So these things are subject to delays. And sometimes it's not because you purposely want a delay, right? Sometimes it's, oh, COVID come. That's why everything stops, right? So those are acts of God now, right? And the other thing is land acquisition is very tricky. And these things are not unique to Indonesia.
Polls show that Indonesians themselves remain divided on the move, with residents of Jakarta overwhelmingly opposed to the plan. For Yuni Salim, Nova Purwadi, VOA News.
Be sure to read and see much more on this story by following us on social media.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Hong Kong's businesses are struggling as coronavirus infections continue to surge as authorities tighten restrictions to entirely suppress the virus, and that's causing many restaurants and cafes to close. You'll find this in all the big stories through the day. on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. NASA celebrates an anniversary on the Martian surface while a space travel startup tumbles back to Earth. Russia helps refuel the International Space Station, and how a recent volcanic eruption could lead to faster tsunami warnings in the future. VOA's Arash Arabisadi brings us news from space.
NASA celebrates 1 year since the Perseverance rover and its tiny sidekick, the Ingenuity helicopter, made this dramatic landing on Mars. Experts say that's when the real work began. NASA's Katie Stack Morgan was at home with her kids when the rover touched down.
We had this moment of celebration, but then we had a couple of hours, and then we had to begin operations and telling the rover how to prepare itself and to do its work on the surface of Mars.
Nicknamed Percy and Ginny, the machines are on a 2-year mission to collect Martian soil samples for Earthlings to analyze for signs of ancient life. Percy carries a drill to core for those samples, but it had never truly been tested until it landed on Mars.
When we got the data down and we saw that we had a sealed sample, we couldn't be more ecstatic. It worked.
As part of NASA's history-making research adventure, Ginny became the first powered aircraft to fly on another planet. Ginny and Percy beamed thousands of images back to Earth, where engineers say they will help prepare NASA astronauts in coming years for manned missions to Mars, which the agency says it hopes will happen in the mid-2030s. Look for the dynamic duo of Ginny and Percy to move from the crater they've been exploring to an ancient river delta in year 2 of their journey.
And liftoff.
In other news, a Russian cargo ship successfully launched from Kazakhstan carrying goods to the International Space Station. It arrived 2 days later at the ISS with nearly 3 tons of food, fuel, water, and other supplies for the crew of Expedition 66. Meanwhile, a batch of small research satellites came falling back to Earth after a failed launch from Florida. California-based rocket startup Astra suffered multiple setbacks, including an engine shutdown days before this doomed flight that appeared to show the craft tumbling from the sky before crashing into the ocean. Finally, NASA says the recent tsunami-causing underwater volcanic eruption near Tonga shook an outer layer of the Earth's atmosphere called the ionosphere. NASA says tracking changes in the ionosphere will help develop an early warning system for tsunamis. While such a system is years away, NASA says it could give hours of advance warning and a head start to evacuating tsunami zones. Arash Arabisadi, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, the Netherlands Prime Minister Mark Rutte has offered a full apology to Indonesia after a historical review found the Dutch had used excessive violence in an attempt to regain control of their former colony after World War II. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the Los Angeles City Council is opening a tiny home village in Westlake in an effort to combat the homelessness problem. The program aims to create low-cost housing for homeless people. Jinya Delu has the story.
A small village of 56 tiny houses opened in Los Angeles in January 2022 as part of the city's effort to address its exploding homelessness problem. This small development is expected to house a little over 100 people. It's the city's 9th such project. Denise lives in this tiny home after being homeless for 3 years. The space is designed for 2 people, but for now she lives here alone. The home is 6 square meters and includes a small TV, a heater, and air conditioning.
There's a place right there, you know, an opportunity to switch things around. You know what I'm saying?
These small homes are designed to provide modest comfort, safety, and a roof over people's heads. Residents also get a guaranteed breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Social workers help the residents rehabilitate and look for a job. Tyler Kirkpatrick with Urban Alchemy, the company that manages this particular village, says unlike similar programs, this one does not include as many restrictions.
We don't have curfews. Our guidelines around substance abuse or substance use is very different because we don't kick anybody out for drinking or for doing drugs. When folks are in a space where they feel like they're ready to try something different and maybe fight their addiction, we have staff that are immediately available to help them to take whatever next step that is.
Kirkpatrick says an addict is more likely to have a successful rehabilitation if he or she moves to new and friendlier environment. But some believe the program is too expensive. The Los Angeles Times reported that a village of 39 homes in the city of North Hollywood costs about $5 million. Meanwhile, authorities say each tiny house costs between $5,000 and $8,000. But some city leaders still back the program.
People are worth investing in. These folks have seen enough trauma. They've had great challenges and difficulty in their lives. And everyone deserves to be invested in so they can reach their potential at some point. That's what makes a society humane and compassionate.
The villages are seen as a temporary solution, and residents are expected to move after 3 to 6 months to subsidized housing. Authorities say that may be difficult because currently there is a shortage of permanent subsidized housing in the city. Jenya Dulo for VOA News, Los Angeles.
One of the key highlights of the 2022 Chicago Auto Show, one of North America's largest and longest-running vehicle showcases, is the display of new all-electric vehicles coming to dealer showrooms soon. VOA's Kane Faribault has more from the McCormick Place Convention Center.
So demand is through the roof.
Jason Turnbull is a Ford marketing manager, promoting a vehicle at the Chicago Auto Show.
And it drives completely by itself.
That isn't yet available on dealer lots, but is already sold out for the foreseeable future.
We have over 200,000 reservations, and we're trying to fulfill those.
He's not talking about the latest sport utility vehicle or a high-performance sports car.
Americans love their pickup trucks.
He's promoting a new full-size pickup truck, which is notable for what it doesn't come with, a traditional combustion engine. The Ford F-150 Lightning is all electric.
It's going to tow and haul just as well as the current trucks in the market and just as durable.
While traditional pickup trucks were top sellers in the United States in 2021, Turnbull admits it seemed unlikely that an all-electric vehicle or EV pickup truck would be as well received as its gasoline-powered counterparts.
Even a couple of years ago, it was almost an oxymoron, EVs and trucks.
Those wanting to buy a Lightning don't seem to be bothered by the vehicle's approximate 600-kilometer range before needing a recharge.
Most people don't drive 400 miles in a day, but they want the capability to be able to go up north, go on a small trip, go on a long trip.
Nicole Kratz is the chief engineer for General Motors' new Chevrolet Silverado EV pickup truck, which is directly competing with the Ford F-150 Lightning. She says a growing network of charging stations across America is helping consumers overcome anxiety about the current range of electric vehicles.
Consumers want range and capability. Having charge stations with our EV growth strategy, as well as having partnerships with other charge station companies, is really going to allow us to have that capability of going even further than that first 400 miles of range.
Kratz says the Silverado EV is the latest offering in a dramatic ramp-up of new electric vehicles General Motors plans to send to dealerships in the not-too-distant future.
We've talked about having 1 million vehicles on the road by 2025 that are EVs, up to 35 models that'll be electric vehicles.
Ford has ambitious electric vehicle plans, too.
Yeah, so we're investing $30 billion in the next couple of years, and we really think that the U.S. market, we're aiming for 40% of our vehicles to be all electric by 2030.
Customers have to wait just to get on a waiting list to buy the Ford F-150 Lightning.
So right now we stop reservations. We're focused on fulfilling those.
Kane Faribault, VOA News, Chicago, Illinois.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to follow us online. You can like us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. Find us on Instagram and YouTube as well. And of course our website, voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.